This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 634, brought to you by Harry's. To get your trial shave set, go to harrys.com/ifanboy right now. That's harrys.com/ifanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you.
I'm in love with the world through the eyes of a girl who's still around the morning after. We broke up a month ago and I grew up. I didn't know I'd be around the morning after.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 634. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And we are iFanboy, and we talk about comics, the comics we read. One of us picks their favorite book, call it the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We talk about other books of the week. The patron pick, if we have some time, listener mail, because we've been going long lately. There's been less listener mail. We apologize. We can't shut up.
Also, there's a lot of books.
Yeah, it's a lot of books.
That's really what's happening here.
The thing is, as we add more segments like the patron power segment, the show gets longer.
Uh-huh. Which we've accounted for, but there's got to be a limit, people.
The point is, despite the tone of voice we just used, it'll be fun. It's a fun show. We have a good time doing it. Hopefully you have a good time listening to it. But it's honestly the highlight of our week.
You know that feeling like behind your eyes that is just going, why aren't you sleeping right now? You know what I'm talking about?
I felt that, yes.
I have that right behind my eyes all the time. And then we happen to record this at a time when there's a lot going on sometimes.
And the thing is, like, that's the opposite of have a good time all the time.
Well, it might be that that's a faulty theory, keyboardist from Spinal Tap, Vivian Savage. I mean, that works for him, great. But look at all the drummers who went down in the process.
That's true. They didn't have a good time. Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be spoilers. Exercise some caution. This week, Josh, you had the luxury, the honor of the pick of the week.
Ed Begley looked like he was having a good time. Stubby K.
I think so. I mean, I think Ed Begley had a great time. He's still having a great time.
Yeah, it's true. The Avengers number 2 is the pick of the week this week. I don't want to take away from the book, but I will tell you this was a bit of a war of attrition. There was not a standout like, oh, this is totally the pick of the week this week. So then I had to sort of take the hard look. Mm-hmm. At what it was that made me, I don't know, gave me what I wanted, gave me something I'm not getting elsewhere. That's been a big part of it for me lately, I've noticed, is that I don't want the same thing over and over again, but the same thing is giving me something I'm looking for. And when I looked at all the books that I read this week, the only book really left standing there that had no real caveats about it was Avengers number 2, which I believe solved many of the issues that we had with Avengers number 1, whereas we're just getting on with it.
Well, Avengers number 1 felt like a prelude issue, even though yeah. Avengers number 1 had its own prelude issue on Free Comic Book Day.
Yes.
It was like double prelude to get to this point, which I agree with you that this
was much more what I was looking for out of the series in issue one.
And I got over my, initially I had to sort of recalibrate for an Ed McGuinness. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, we're doing a different, it's a different thing than I'm used to seeing a lot of times. And I wasn't sure if it was a step back. By this point, I'm good. I'm good with Ed McGuinness here. I noticed, I've been thinking about this a lot. Ed McGuinness works with an inker. And I'm realizing how rare that is now.
It's super rare, especially when you're like us and you put together this script every week with where we list the creative team, so we don't have to look around like idiots trying to find names like we used to.
Yeah.
Just how rare it is you put an anchor on the list. It's very rare.
Yeah, and it tends to be guys who came up in the 90s.
Yeah,
or before. Guys now, this has nothing to do with the book, but I have been thinking about it, and it's really interesting, and I think that there's two things happen. I think it's an economic change largely. One, budgets are what they are, and if you have to pay an inker, that's more people, and so the publisher.
Well, on the other hand, they can charge more for inking. And
well, that's the other side of it, though. So, like, the publisher wants to spend less money, and the artist needs to make more money to get by. As deadlines and pages and whatever the books are coming out, the more they can do, and the more they can make. You know, artists that came up in the last 10 years or so sort of said, "We're not." There's not a lot of guys who's like, "I'm just gonna be a penciler." And so I'm sure there's some part of artistic control over that, but then there's another part of, you know, you're going to make more for it.
Also, I think people who are doing strictly digital, you know, you can ink right on the breakdowns.
Yeah, but it's still a time, you know, it's still a time thing. So it takes more time to do it theoretically. Everybody's process is a little different.
But you're right. It's rare. It's rare. There's, I think last week we had a couple and it was weird.
Yeah. And that's a big change. I think in the lifetime of us doing the show, like it used to be the book would be penciler, inker,
this week,
colorist.
Yeah.
Sometimes
this
it'd week be a breakdown artist, a tight penciler, and then an inker.
I think there's two books with inkers on our list this week.
Yeah. And both of the artists are from different eras.
Right.
Very interesting.
Anyway,
so like I said, we got we won.
We should mention those inkers. We told you, Mark Morales and Jay Leistein. If you're on Instagram, follow Mark Morales. He posts really great videos of him inking work.
I you know what? I should caveat this. I really like inkers a lot. I think that we are missing a thing, and I think that they do something because they can take time with it. That somebody is doing the whole book on their own. Not everything doesn't fit for, but I remember. I've seen, you know, you see inkers do work, and it's almost the coolest part of it because doing it in pencils is kind of interesting to watch it come together, but watching the inker put in that sort of that finishing smooth line
comes to life.
Yeah, I really like that part. And I always remember whenever we don't think of Jimmy Palmiotti as this anymore, but in my mind, he was an inker first and he was a great inker. He had just a wonderful line. Or whenever I see, Klaus Janson's name on something or, the other one who's awesome, who is from the 80s, Sienkiewicz. Like, whenever Sienkiewicz inks anything, I don't even need him to draw. I just want him to ink it. I'm always very happy. So, moving along. The Avengers number 2. I thought this was really fun. I like the size of it. I like the throwback to the original Avengers formation with the villain.
Yes. Loki.
And I'm gonna tease something here. I'm going to pick up some of this conversation when we talk about our Books Below book.
Okay.
The Avengers breakout is the beginning.
New Avengers.
New Avengers. Right. Beginning of Bendis's run with David Finch. I noticed some things because I was reading that concurrently with reading this. So that's a teaser for those of you to get to that Books Below. But let's talk about this putting the team together and what we think of the team. And I will start by saying I like this team. I mean,
it's fun. So yeah, read the names of the team.
Yeah, you've got Captain America, Thor, Iron Man. You've got the big hitters, the Grant Morrison approach to it. Moving down a tier, you have Captain Marvel, Doctor Strange, and Black Panther. And then your wild cards are new Ghost Rider. You've always got to have one wild card that's sort of like a character you know, but is a different version of them to see how they fit in. This is your Grant Morrison, Wally West character.
And then Kyle Rayner. This is Kyle Rayner.
Yep, that too. Jennifer Walters, She-Hulk, again, something familiar, but a little different. Now She-Hulk's been around for 40 plus
years.
She's a more
savage Hulk-esque She-Hulk.
Yeah. So there's a different thing going on. It's funny when she's not, the Hulk form, I keep thinking it's Jessica Drew because that's how they drew her for
Hulk in the past when we were kids, she was always She-Hulk.
Yeah. And it
never really went back to human form. So in my head, I have the same problem, but yeah, I mean, it's a fun team. You want a young new character in the team as the eyes of the audience, mm-hmm. as the audience surrogate. So that's what Ghost Rider is here. Even though he's been around a little bit, he's not as quite as well established.
Many people read that.
I'm not really complaining. I just want to caveat that. Obviously, other than She-Hulk and a little bit Ghost Rider, these are all Marvel Cinematic Universe characters.
Sure. But
however, which is okay. On the other hand, I feel like there's a lot of good characters out there that we're never going to see anymore because they're not in the movies. You know, the Avengers used to have a lot of B and C level characters and they were great, like Black Knight and people like, you know, like that.
Gilgamesh.
But they're just not in the movies. So they're not.
Right.
They're not going to be the focus. It's happening in all comics right now as these companies become more synergistic with their film side. It's just a bummer. This is a great team. I like it. I just had the thought as they were coming together that, you know, the days of Wonder Man and Dr. Druid, might be gone just because they're not in the movies, so they're not in the books. But anyway,
again, look for that Booksplode. Because okay. There's a really salient point about that I'm not making now, and it's very difficult.
Okay. So anyway, it is a fun team. I like the Ghost Rider is a fun spice to it. Out of Control, Jennifer Walters is a fun little mm-hmm. spice to it. We didn't really get much Doctor Strange here.
No.
But he's been around forever in the Avengers since Bendis' run. It is a good lineup, a classic and new people. And someone asked me what the deal was with Thor's hammer, and I didn't know. Why is it gold?
It's not the original.
Mjolnir.
It's not Mjolnir. It's something else. And I honestly don't remember exactly what it was because I saw basically – I read that around the same time that I saw Infinity War, and now I'm getting them mixed up with each other.
Well, it's not Stormbreaker. That's an axe.
It's not, but I know, but they forged a hammer there. I feel like there's a little – I feel like this hammer has a little chunk of Mjolnir in it that was left over from when Jane Foster Thor threw Mangog and the hammer into the sun.
Okay.
And so this was what was left of it, I think, or something like that. So this is this like tiny bit that Thor wielded into this hammer, but I don't remember exactly.
It's not. I mean, there's not a lot story-wise to talk about in the last issue.
No.
All those Celestials, is that what they are here? Because as we talked about, this is the exact same storyline that's happening over.
Ultra Celestials.
They fell to the Earth.
Omega.
And there's all kinds of problems.
It's Omega something in the Justice League book, and these are something. Something other. I mean, the thing is, you're right, though. There's not like a lot. It really is like, here are a lot of things. Ed McGuinness, you draw this, and we're just going to look at it. And that totally okay with me for this. I liked that we've got a reversion for Loki here. We're just like, this is Loki. This is classic comic book Loki.
Sounding very much like Tom Hiddleston. Again, not a complaint.
Yeah, no, it's just, but also like, that's now the voice that everybody hears, so it's probably hard not to write that. Which I'm cool with. And I knew like right away, I was like, oh, this is like early on. Cause it's green text on white. Like I was like, oh, that's Loki. That's clearly the thing that's happening. And that, if you don't know, Avengers number, one, you're right.
Avengers number one.
Four is Captain America. I started to say it and I was like, that doesn't make sense because I was thinking of, like Iron Man doesn't show up in number one. He shows up in 186 and Thor doesn't show up in number one of Journey into Mystery. It's number like 84 or whatever. So anyway, Loki's the original villain who brought them together. And here he is doing that. So there's always sort of that throwback legacy element that's still part of this. And, you know, there's going to be a twist or whatever and all the tough guys are taken out. I think there's a little bit of it's introductory, so I know why they're doing it, but there's a lot of like the Ghost Rider being like, I don't like this. I don't know why I'm here. His thing. And I get it. So I'm like, that's enough. Turn that down. I understand what's going on.
Well, and they still aren't actually together yet. They're still all all separately fighting the Celestial problem. They haven't actually come together as a team. The only people who are at this point considering themselves Avengers are Thor, Iron Man, Captain America. They're like, let's reform the Avengers. The rest of them, Ghost Rider ran into She-Hulk. Doctor Strange is with Black Panther because they were doing something else. And Captain Marvel just ran into Iron Man in this issue. So they haven't really come together and say, hey, we're a team. It's more like we're watching these pieces slowly come together to form the Avengers.
There was just a lot of panels that I liked seeing. Like, I really like the scale that McGuinness is getting to do. There's a shot of Captain Marvel, like, sort of right over the Eternals, the Celestial, his shoulder, you know, and as it reaches down into the East River.
Yeah.
And I think that looks so cool. You know, the Ghost Rider's car, which I'm undecided about, you know, like it looks cool. Like it's driving at us, is all this energy and fury. There's a shot of, when She-Hulk's out, and she bursts her shoe open. I was like, that's great. That's sort of classic, really fun stuff. There was a lot of that in here. So it sort of made me happy in that same way that, like, you know, the Morrison, Howard Porter Justice League did. It was just like, just make this stuff be what
go back to basics, but do it in a modern way. I mean, we haven't really seen McGinnis much since
Red Hulk.
So,
me anyway.
Yeah. He's one of those classic superhero artists who, if you have a script full of lots of punching, he makes it look awesome.
And it's, you know, it's like it's smoothed out. Like it's a lot of the really good things from the 90s. Are in this, and it, you know, it needs to be in the right place. I remember when you put Romita on Avengers, it was like, this is too much. It didn't work for me.
Well, because it was Bendis for Avengers.
Yeah,
Avengers. I think
true.
If he draws, he could draw this script just fine.
Probably. I'll give you that. But I'd also think like it's good choices by Aaron about like just give the guy what works for him and let him do it. And I'm sure the plot and the character and all that stuff will be there, but he's letting it breathe. Now, to a lot of readers, I don't know if that feels like there's not enough there or it goes by really fast, but it works for me very much so.
It's the feeling I wanted when I read the first issue.
Yes.
So I'm now very excited about the book.
Yeah, it's like a promise kept.
So our old friend Garth Ennis seems to have found a home in Aftershock. He's been doing Jimmy's Bastards there, which wraps
like,
up next.
He's like a friend who you know who's like homeless, but he always manages to stay with somebody.
What was the phrase we had at Comic-Con? 21st century hobo? Like, he's always got a couch to fall on.
Yeah.
So he has Jimmy's Bastards, which is his piss-taking of James Bond at Aftershock, which is wrapping up next with one more issue. And now we've got a new series this week, A Walk Through Hell, number one, with art by Goran Suzuka, who was the alternate artist on Why the Last Man, and who is also very terrific.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know this was coming. This was a nice little surprise. And I liked it, but I imagine that some people will not like it.
Okay. If this didn't have Garth Ennis's name on it, I would probably have a different opinion.
Okay.
I have expectations about that. But also, because it has Garth Ennis's name on it, I have a different opinion. Okay. If you were to give me this and not tell me who it was, I would have told you in a million years this was Garth Ennis.
Really? Because I thought it had a very preacher vibe to it. And I don't mean quality-wise. I mean there's some themes here that are very similar.
Themes, maybe. But a lot of the, I don't know, the way that these conversations went, the sort of overall, right up until the last couple of pages when we get, it's like, if you didn't tell me this is a horror book, I guess, which is not a thing that I typically look for. But right up until the last couple of pages, you wouldn't know that. It was a really sort of subtle introduction to what that is. So that's one thing. Two, there's a lot of sort of current events kind of stuff. There's basically like there's social media stuff in here. Yeah. And there's a lot of like they talk about the president specifically. They talk about guns. They do that. I don't tend to think of him as part of that conversation because he's not on social media. He's not anything, but clearly he's seeing it and paying attention to it. And he's making a comment on it. And a little part of me was like, I don't know that I want him to comment on that because I actually come to you because you don't have that in your stuff. Now, it doesn't say it isn't relevant. It doesn't say that his, you know, writing voice shouldn't include it, but it didn't feel like Garth Ennis to me in that sense. I also don't know these characters very well yet. So he comes out in that kind of thing later.
So we open on a mass shooting in a mall. Pretty shocking opening. Mm-hmm. Very Garth Ennis, but also I imagine very tough for a lot of people, a lot of readers. Mm-hmm. And then we meet two FBI agents. One of them, who's the female officer, is very clearly agent is very clearly troubled. She's having bad dreams. The other agent is younger and more by the book. And they are no longer doing major cases. They're sort of on boring stuff. But then they get assigned a warehouse case. Some other agents went into this warehouse to investigate a crime. They went missing, and so they go sent to go find out what's going on, and then that's where things sort of get supernaturally, where the cops won't go in because they feel bad when they go in.
I I will say, like, I don't like supernatural horror stuff all that much. I thought that this was a really interesting, up until what we've seen so far, was a super interesting concept, and I really like the way that it was presented.
Yeah, it's very subtle. And then I see,
and if you look at the cover after the fact, like, it's like, oh yeah, that's totally it. It's really interesting.
See, I think, I mean, look, I mean, Garth Ennis did Preacher, so it's not like he is unknown to supernatural elements. I mean, that,
sure, no,
the entire book is supernatural. So this felt to me very much like that. Like there's a,
yeah, okay, I see that.
There is an
now
evil force in the warehouse. We don't know what it is, but to me, the scene where the SWAT team who had previously gone in to find the agents all shoot each other in the back of their truck was a very Garth, very Preacher-y yes scene to me.
Yeah, I can see that. It's, you know what, I think I was more talking about the actual individual voice, like the way that the there was a narration in the beginning, and I've never seen Garth Ennis do that. That was a thing for me that was like, well, that's very strange. I really like, basically the conceit here is that I guess this is a spoiler, but Connor already spoiled the thing that would, anyway. They get there and the SWAT team went in, and 30 seconds later they came out because they said they had a bad feeling. And everyone's like, that's really weird.
tough as nails guys just went in and out.
I really liked the mundaneness of that action. And then when we cut to see them inside the police truck, how they're talking to each other, still doesn't seem like such a big deal. Like, it's like, it seems like they're just talking about a normal thing. They're obviously creeped out and freaked out a little bit. But
it's a little bit of brilliant writing where they're basically saying, we have to get out of here. And we have to go.
And they all understand it together, not arguing with each other.
But you think they want to bail. No, what they're talking about is they have to die.
Right.
They have to get out of here being the life. And as that unfolded, I thought it was very – when you turn that page, either physically or digitally, and suddenly they're all pointing guns at each other's heads, I was like, oh, shit. And then there's a great silent panel where the back it all goes white around the characters. And then I thought that page I thought was a really brilliantly done page.
Yeah, it was.
I like this a lot. I didn't love it, but I liked it a lot.
I'm great with it with you.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't Garth Ennis on the front, I don't know that I would have given it that much thought.
Because you have he has rope from you.
Yeah.
At least and not everything he writes, you know, is for us.
Right. Totally. That's absolutely the case. And also, you know, a lot of times when he does his I don't know, creator own, but he does his stuff at other publishers, you know, they don't often have the cash to pay
good artists,
top flight artists. And, you know, Goran Cizanko has the goods. So
yeah, he's got that, and he's got Russ Braun on Jimmy's Bastards. He's got really two really good artists on his Aftershock books.
And he's worked with Russ Braun a lot, too. So that's, there's that.
Captain America 702, which I liked more than the last issue.
I was going to say, because you had an issue with it, but at the end of it, I was like, say what you will, Captain America, no, I think this is a really fun sci-fi story.
Yeah, for sure. And we continue here with the guest artists doing flashback stories, whereas last time we had Adam Hughes and we had a very stealthy, was it J.G. Jones?
Yeah.
This time we had Rod
Apparently.
Rice and
I still
and,
don't believe
Howard,
it.
Howard Chaykin. And we have Leonardo Romero doing a very convincing impression of Chris Somney.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, I love the style, clearly.
Yeah.
I just was like, wow, he's really hewing close to Somney here.
Now, if I'm Somney, I'm not very happy about that. I don't know. I don't know what this guy draws like most of the time, but it's almost like it's like you know, Grand Moff Tarkin in Rogue One. I don't know about
I don't
this.
Like that at all.
Well, you know, like, do you know Mike, is it Michael Walsh? Yeah, like when he first came on the scene, he seemed a lot like Somni, but he's definitely differentiated himself. That I don't think that I can see the similarities, but I don't think that they're the same person.
Right.
I feel like this is really close and it's weird.
Well, I'm Googling Leonardo Romero, his art, and that's his style. He's not doing this for the book.
Well, you know, then they just picked.
So it's clearly a school, you know. It's like those. It's like 5 years ago or somewhere around there. There was a lot of guys drawing like McKelvey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And now there's guys drawing like Somni. So, I think he should take it as a compliment, but I'm not him, so I'm not going to tell him how to feel.
Yeah, but following him, like to see it on another book, but following him on the next issue
after
he sort of left the company is interesting. But who knows?
He's good, though. He's good.
He is. It's a great world building, both from a visual standpoint and a storytelling standpoint. Like, sometimes I get kind of amazed at the depths to which Mark Waid has within him to keep making up new stories. And it's been three decades. That's amazing.
So as we talked about last time, this is a future story in which one of Steve Rogers' descendants is the official historian of the U.S. government, because now his history has been placed as an elevated position. But his son is sick, and there's a whole bunch of, there's a whole kerfluffle about of that. I honestly forgot a lot of the details, but
sure.
Here we get a flashback from Rod Rice in which an injured Captain America is being saved by Sharon and a bunch of French resistance fighters, which I liked a lot. And where Sharon has to use the shield to block gunfire to keep him alive. And then we had a brief Howard Chaykin flashback to.
Yeah, we did. That's good, Chaykin.
Red Skull and Steve Rogers fighting, I guess, inside the Cosmic Cube. Cosmic Cube stuff's always sort of mind-bending. The implication is that Steve is trapped in the Cosmic Cube and they just need to free him. And the old crazy historian in the Historians Club, which I love Historians Club.
The whole scene with him was great.
It tells Steve's descendant that, oh, you just need to find him. He's out there. And he shows him a drawing of the shield. And so through a bunch of events, he finds the Cosmic Cube and he smashes it open to reveal not Steve, but Red Skull.
Yeah.
And I thought this was terrific.
Yeah, it was. It's a really fun sci-fi story that is sort of Captain America adjacent.
I mean, it's like, oh, we just need to kill time till the next reboot. Just whatever, whatever you got, Mark.
Yeah, and we're running towards
whatever you feel like doing.
Yeah, and we're running towards Captain America, like the real Captain America. We're not trying to get away from a weird Captain America, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, this feels right in line. Mm-hmm. This is on brand for Cap.
That shield's broken, by the way.
It's got a
crack in it.
It's always broken. Yeah, I'd rather him have the cracked shield in the movie than the little black shields he had. I don't want to drink.
Get this man a shield. That's what he said. He didn't say, get this man two little tiny drink trays.
They promised something in the trailers that did not deliver.
You're not, like, it was a big moment. Because, good, he's going to get a shield. What? That's like when you go to a restaurant and you're like, oh, we're going to have dinner. It's going to be great. And then fucking tapas.
Oh, so I went to a work dinner the other night, and it was like this great restaurant that I go to a lot, and I was so excited because work was going to pay for it, you know. So you can, yeah. And let's do shared plates. No,
oh, the worst.
I ended up having one bite of pasta, one bite of salmon, and I got home and I was starving.
That's not a meal. No. Let's do shared plates. You know what motion I'm making with my hand right now, don't you?
I made up for it with a lot of wine, and that was a mistake because I hadn't had food. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about Superman Special Number One. This is the companion piece to Action Comics Special Number One, which we had a couple weeks ago. This, as we have learned since, is basically, sorry guys that we hijacked your books when Bendis came over, so you can finish up what you were going to do here.
Sorry, everyone. There's a new guy coming, and we like him more.
So last time, who was it last time?
I don't know.
It was whoever. It was Dan Jurgens.
Jurgens, the Jurgens Action Comics one.
One more story, sort of wrapping things up. Here we get Patrick Gleason and Tomasi wrapping things up with the return to Dinosaur Island, which I loved that story originally, so I was very happy to read another chapter of this, where, if you recall, they was sort of a tribute to Darwin Cook and New Frontier, where Clark and Jonathan went through some portal, ended up on Dinosaur Island, basically from New Frontier, where the losers were, and they had an adventure. Well, here they go back to rescue the guy who was left alive, and they bring him to the future. And I always like those stories where old soldiers come to the future and see what the world's like, and get robotic legs and things like that. It was a fun little story.
It was. It totally was. Scott Gadlewski is great. He did something. It must have been one of these. We talked about him a couple of months ago or something like that. And when I saw his name this time, I was like, I don't remember why, but I know I liked that person. And he delivered, you know, monsters, dinosaurs, huge snakes, gorillas, you know, the pages are great. On that whole sequence, basically.
Yeah.
And then even in the stuff in our world, you know, when the soldier, you know, sort of is at the hotel, the quiet stuff is really good.
Great storytelling.
Yeah.
And listen, sometimes I want the tropes. Give me the tropes. Mm-hmm. Go back for the dog tags. Can't sleep in the bed, sleep in the truck bed. Like, I want it. And
it hit the basic emotional, you know, things.
Now, do we have to talk about the other stories?
Well, this Mark Russell story was better than the last Mark Russell story I read.
I didn't like this one. I liked this one less than the other one.
Okay. Apparently someone's holding Brian Hitch hostage.
The thing is, look, we like Mark Russell a lot. Obviously, we talked about Flintstones. It was our book of the year, and we've come around on Snagglepuss, but I feel like something is off here.
Well, I think that what's happening is, and this is 100% speculation, I think that the realization is, oh, if I want to do this, I have to be able to do the regular things.
Yeah.
And so he's getting an opportunity to do that. And I'm not going to say he's failing at it, but I do think that he's learning it. And because I don't think it's a natural fit for his style.
No, for sure.
And we saw this happen with Jeff Lemire, though.
But the thing is, like, if there's a character who is 180 degrees diametrically opposed to Mark Russell's style, it's Superman.
Maybe.
Superman is sort of a white bread do-gooder with his hands on his hips, and that's what he needs to be successful. And Mark Russell is cynical in the best possible way.
Well, I think there's a way to make that work, and I think that he's got so much skill and so much talent. I think he can get there, but we're watching him work it out.
Yep.
I think. That's my positive take on it.
No, I didn't really.
I didn't get it.
The third story, but I really liked looking at it. The Cary Andrews art.
Yeah.
Andrews.
I didn't get it at all from it.
Yeah, it was a story about Atomic Robo. That's Dark Horse, right? Atomic Knight. What is this?
Atomic Skullhead.
He's a villain now working for the Metropolis Police, so he helps Superman out on a case, and it looked really awesome.
Yeah.
There's a really great page where Superman punches the bad guy, and it's all pow inside the word balloon. It's just great stuff here.
That first page is great where the Skull Guy's having his coffee and he's scratching his butt.
Yeah.
And he has bunny slippers on. That shouldn't work, but it was done really well.
I've been trying desperately, dear listeners, to find slippers like that that'll fit adult feet. And if you have a source, let me know.
Bunny slippers.
Any kind of funny animal feet slippers. Fuzzy. Huh.
I find that when I see them in retail outlets, like, they're massive. Like, they're silly. Not tenable. They're too silly, basically.
My sister used to have really great fuzzy tiger slippers, and I stole them. Not physically. I just started wearing them. And my feet hung out the back, but I loved them so much. I was going to say,
you're much larger than your sister.
Yeah.
So.
I appropriated them.
I see. Well, such is the way of siblings.
I didn't read this next one.
I didn't expect this one. It almost feels like I saw the cover of the Mighty Thor at the Gates of Valhalla, and I was like, what the hell is this? Like, I thought it was like a reprint story or maybe even a trade or something. But it's written by Jason Aaron. There's two stories in it with art by Jen Bartel and Ramon Perez, which pulled me in. And color by Matthew Wilson. So there's been sort of, he's been on Thor for a while. Basically, the two stories are, you remember the granddaughters of Thor from the beginning of the Jason Aaron?
Yes, the ones from the Old Man Thor storyline.
They do some time traveling in this. And they go around. They're trying to find somebody, and we're not entirely clear who it is. And they go back and they find young Thor, like the one from the Norse era, and he can't lift the hammer up, and they leave him there. And then they very quickly find the once in future Thor from the 26th century. You remember that one? In my first comic book.
Maybe.
He's got like a leather outfit on, and like his helmet has a hole and his long hair sticks through it. And that was the first image of Thor that I saw. And I sought out that that back issue. So I had a little like moment of, oh, right, that is 86 or so, something like that. There was really literally only one panel as we go through. There's sort of three Thor iterations that we see as they're trying to find the right place to go. And then they get into the future and they see, you know, old Thor, he's fighting something and they want to help him, but they can't. Because they're, you know, time travel rules and stuff like that. And finally, they end up with Jane Foster, and they're like, she was the one that we were going to see, and she's, you know, not Thor. She's going to get her cancer treatment or whatever, and they just have a nice moment with her. I don't know that it was necessary as a capper, since we kind of ended her story in this part.
Yeah, how do you feel about it versus the way it ended in the previous issue?
I mean, she didn't die. They brought her back, and so, like, the daughters just went to visit her, and it sort of gave her a validation. It was a little nice because there was... Jane Foster's story as Thor ended through everybody else. We didn't really, like, it was all everybody else's feeling about her, whether it was Odin saying I'm okay with it and Thor saying I'm okay with it, but it wasn't really Jane Foster of accepting it and having a bit to, it wasn't about, even though it was about her, it wasn't her story. And so this was a way to sort of do that. Then this, the second part, by Ramon Perez is basically following, Malekith around, because we forget there's still this giant war going on that has been going on since forever, in all the Nine Realms. As you see him, he's, you know, he's just, it's watching him go around and be evil, and the idea that that's still going on, and that's the next thing that they're all going to have to deal with. Now how Thor is going to deal with that while being in Avengers and doing it in his own book, and Jason Aaron's writing both of them, not my problem. But it was just like, it was like a fun little light thing. And if you've liked, you know, Jason Aaron writing it, this is part of that story. It is a go-between. It's sort of the end of the last thing and the beginning of the next thing. This is what Avengers 1 would be. And if this said this was the first issue of the next thing, we'd be like, what the fuck is this? But it wasn't. It was fun. I liked it.
Cool. All right, cool.
Now, last week, man, you put me on the spot. You said, what is it? What is it, Josh, that you like most about Harry's? And this was not a hard answer for me to come up with, but I have to ask you now, and you can't repeat yourself. What is it you like best about Harry's, Connor?
Well, I just answered that question last week. Well, 1 week ago, right now, we answered this. You have to ask a new question.
I do.
I will ask. I will answer. I will answer it anyway, even though you're a jerk. It's that the subscription model means, like clockwork, I never run out of material.
You are a subscriber.
Yes, I'm a subscriber. So, for instance, I put my, as I said before in previous shows, every Saturday I change my blade. And I put my last blade on this Saturday. I was like, oh, geez, I got a bunch of trips coming up. I hope the new box comes in time. And boom, it came 2 days ago, right on time. So I don't have to think about it. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to worry about being out of blades. I don't have to worry about being out of creams. It just shows up in my mailbox just like that. I don't even worry about it.
That's a really good answer. You're a pro. You know that? Thank you. It was really good. See, I don't shave with a regularity, so I don't really know when I'm going to run out. But I know that if I buy like 8 of them, I'm good for a long time. Right. That's going to be. We like these things. That's why we're doing it. One of the things is that Harry stands behind the quality of their blades. You know that just by switching razors, we know that switching razors is an easy decision. I know that when I was like, oh, I got to get away from, I'm not allowed to say it. We're not supposed to. That other company who makes all the razors. When I was moving away from them, I thought, is this the thing I want to do? But it was years ago, way before they were sponsored the show, and I've been totally down with it ever since. It'll be worth their standing behind their stuff. There's this trial offer. You can claim yours by going to harrys.com/ifanboy. And when you do that, what you're going to find out is that these are great razor blades. Harry's were, they didn't like paying for expensive razors and all the unnecessary features, many strips, many extra blades. It was just starting to get silly. They started their own company. They bought a factory in Germany. And there was a word that I found last week, but I've forgotten it. But it was a good word.
Farfurnugan.
It was, nope, that's the joy of driving. That's a different thing. They bought this factory, and they've been making blades there for 95 years.
That one came
from
somewhere deep in my brain. I don't know where that – I haven't said that in probably 20 years.
That was a classic run of great ads from Volkswagen. By selling directly you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 for every blade compared to $4. I've also seen them in retail outlets. I've definitely seen them in Targets in multiple places. If you don't love your shave, of course, let Harry's know within 30 days, and they're going to offer you a full refund. So how about that trial offer? It's a $13 value of the set. Comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. It has a weighted ergonomic handle. We talked about that last week. It has a 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, which we're fans of, and of course, the vaunted travel blade cover so that you don't slice your fingers open in your DOP bag. I don't know where the word DOP comes from. It's the correct word, though.
Shave Blade Factory. Reiserkling Fabrik.
I want to say that like French. Fabric. Listen, there are German. I know there are German and Austrian listeners, and they are just like,
sorry, dudes.
Cotton Himmel.
Sorry, Fräuleins and Frau. I don't know.
Yeah, those are both women. I know that much. Hairs. Don't you say hairs?
Sorry, everyone.
Listeners of the show can go to harrys.com/ifanboy to check out that trial set, and so make sure that you get there, redeem the offer, and let them know that we sent you and help support the show. And thank you for listening to us blather on. We totally don't get bored talking about this, and I think that's apparent to you. So that means something.
The next two books are going to be really quick. Aquaman 36, I wanted to mention because the first arc of this new sort of incarnation of Aquaman was drawn by the guy from Top Cow, Steven Sejic guy.
Okay.
That guy.
Yep. Yep.
Stephen, and he really
Sejic.
He injected a whole bunch of exciting energy and new visual aesthetic to it. And then he left after that arc. And the story's still going on. And now it's drawn by Riccardo Federici. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different style. It's a European style. It has a different quality. It's taken me about this many issues to not get used to it, because I always thought it was good, but to get used to it in this particular story because it is so different. But now it's just wonderful to look at. I mean, it's beautiful. I would recommend anyone look at some preview pages from Aquaman 36.
Yeah, you were all about this.
Yeah.
And you still are.
The story's still good, where the Aquaman's been deposed. He's the mythical, the Aquaman of the, you know, living in the streets, and he's leading a coup to depose the Mad King who has taken all the magic. But the point is...
And you don't mind that as a reimagining?
Yeah, it's fine. And even if it doesn't make sense with other books.
Quality trumps everything.
Yeah, and the fact is, Riccardo Federici is a big-time artist. It's just beautiful to look at. And then similarly, Hunt for Wolverine, The Claws of a Killer, number one. I think there's like apparently 15 of these four-issue miniseries related to Wolverine coming back, not surprisingly. But this one, drawn by Butch Geis, who is one of those artists we were talking about in the early part of the show from the old school, who has an inker, in this case, Cam Smith. And man alive, this is a good-looking book. You know, a lot of those guys who've been around as long as Butch has have lost a little bit on their fastball, but not him.
Nice.
He's still got it, and there's a couple of really great panels. Unfortunately, this book is about Sabretooth and Lady Deathstrike and Logan's dumb son with the Mohawk, and I don't like any of those characters, so I was like, I don't want to read this, but then I looked at it, and I was like, oh, well, but the art is so good, so I don't know what I'm going to do, but there's at least four of these miniseries.
Yeah, you're in for it, huh?
I guess.
I was just turned off by that title. The Claws of a Killer.
Oh, it's dumb. It's totally
dumb. Who do you think I am? Inker Cam Smith. Are there Americans named Cam, or is that just a Canadian main name?
Cameron.
I know it's what's the, but it seems like every time there's a Cam, that's a Canadian.
Could be. We have a Cameron in our company here. People call him Cam. He's American.
From Canada? No?
No.
Huh. At least Wisconsin, somewhere up there?
I don't think so.
He probably doesn't want this information out there.
Probably not. I'll give you his address.
I read Quicksilver No Surrender just because I was looking for something else to read.
I was shocked to see this on the rundown.
Well, I was like, I kind of like Quicksilver. Let's see what they're doing over here, because it seemed like a thing that I could jump into. And then I saw inside that the story was by Salad and Ahmed, who I like a lot, or at least I had on that one series, and art by Eric Gwynn, who I think I know from something, but I don't remember what. I think he did the Wildcats Volume 3.
That sounds very, very accurate.
And other things since then, but that's what I think of him. And that's probably 15 years ago, but that's what I remembered. I feel like this is part of a... I thought I would just jump onto a thing, but I feel like whatever this No Surrender thing is part of like a...
Right.
That I don't understand.
Wow, suddenly you made everything click in my brain. So Avengers No Surrender was that weekly series that I read for no reason.
Okay.
And in that series, Quicksilver, to save the day, had to run super fast, and sort of like the Flash, ended up disappearing into the speed stuff.
Oh, yeah. So he's in a different dimension or something in this one.
I don't know what Marvel calls it, but that's what happened. And so No Surrender would be a tie into the Marvel. Right.
Well, like there were some interesting ideas, but like I had a hard time anchoring to it. Like it looked good and it was fine. I don't know. It didn't grab me in any way, really. I wanted it to. I was like, you know what? Maybe this will be the great Quicksilver story I didn't know about, but but maybe if you're reading all the other thing, it will make more sense. But I tried it. That's the point, is I tried it.
Give it a shot.
Flavor!
Did you read Flavor number one?
No, I would have if I had noticed it.
Flavor number one, Image Comics, written by our old pal Joe Keating, who's now Joseph Keating in the book, so much more highfalutin.
Maybe it's a guild thing.
Art by Wook Jen Clark, who is the co-creator of the book. And this is, I guess, an all-ages book. But I really wanted to mention that there's an opening double-page spread here that Wook Jen Clark just draws the fucking hell out of. It's just, it's gorgeous. It's just amazing. There's dynamism and detail and tons of characters. It's a cartoony style, a YA style to the art. And there's a, you know, dog that's sort of anthropomorphic. It's driving a, it's the dog's the one driving the bicycle that the girl's riding in. Basically, this is a world in which, and we've seen this trend happening in comics. This is the world in which chefs are the hotness.
Oh,
they're the celebrities. They're the most important people in the society, and you have to be. You have to be licensed. You can't open a restaurant unless you're a licensed, registered chef. And it's sort of medieval, also sort of modern. There's swords. The cops have swords instead of guns, and people sort of dress sort of medievally, but sort of modern. It's fun. I was really impressed by the art. Not all the way through. I think there were some problems at points. I don't know what Jin Clark's history is, but pretty close to being, you know, a terrific YA type artist. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious enough. I like, you know, Joe's a really good writer. I just haven't read a bunch of his books because he did a wrestling one. I'm not really, really interested in that. And I fell off that Shudder one. But, you know, I like food.
I mean, who doesn't?
And this one has a culinary consultant in the creative team, which Joe claims in The Back Matter is the first book ever to have a culinary consultant. I thought Starve did, but...
Well, I mean, Bourdain does books, and he is his own. Anyway, I just want to quickly touch on The Wildstorm, number 13. This is the beginning of sort of the second half. I guess it's, according to the cover, it's going to 24 issues, and it's been a little bit, I think, since we've had one. I just read it, and I thought, man, Warren Ellis is still really, really good. Mostly at being Warren Ellis, but you know, this is one of those things where he's reimagining something.
Hey, listen, when you go out on tours, sometimes you get to a point you just play the hits.
Sure, but his hits are pretty good. It's like yeah. if you give Alan Moore just do some superheroes, they would be amazing. He doesn't want to for do sure. it all the time.
No. But
Warren Ellis has been like, whatever, that's fine.
Doesn't want to, nor does he need to, and so he won't.
So we've, you know, this is basically, it's a reimagining of the Wildstorm universe that we've been going through, and keeping that in mind, like, it's real good. I know that you were lukewarm on the artist at the beginning. I really like John Davison. I think he's perfect for this. I think the storytelling is there, and it certainly has the right tone for the story that's going on. And we've
I ended up dropping off this.
Yeah, no, I figured. But there's some revelations here. For some reason, I really like the Wildstorm universe. I always have. When I got to it. And so there's sort of the Kara, the aliens are all sort of, it's different than the other way, but the aliens are all still around and, it's going to start to become a thing. It's been a very slow burn. I enjoyed it. That's my point.
All right. Well, there you go. Those are the books we're going to talk about. If you go to patreon.com/ifanboy there, if you sign up to become a patron of the show, you can vote every week to put a book into the rundown. And this week it was another blowout. The patrons very much wanted us to read X-Men, The Wedding Special, number 1, which is a lie.
It's true. It was a misnomer.
There is no wedding in The Wedding Special. So here we have the run-up to Kitty Pryde and Colossus's wedding. So we have three stories. One, the first one is basically a history of Kitty Pryde. The second one is Colossus's bachelor party. The third one is Kitty Pryde's bachelorette party. And this was not good.
Yeah, but that's what I was... Yeah, this was stupid.
Yeah.
And just for reference, I said, well, maybe that's just me. So I checked with former host of the show, Ron Richards. And I said...
Oh!
I said, have you read this? And he said, no. Because why would he need to read them immediately? But what he said, I think, was enlightening, was, I'm more focused on the actual wedding. So he knew ahead of time that it was not about the wedding, and he knew not to give it too much credence.
I thought you were going to get him in trouble for a second there.
So his words are his own.
So.
I want to say I put that out there. I thought maybe I'm biased. I will say this. I got to it. I thought the wedding special, and I thought, am I going to have to read a lot of pages for this thing? And then I thought, oh, it's just the regular size pages. And then I got to the end of the Chris Claremont story at the end. I go, well, I guess he got most of the book. And I was like, oh, I'm only 10 pages in. Oh, no. Which is basically an accounting of everything that happened in Kitty Pryde's life, which turns out I've read all of it because nobody else used her other than these stories, or that's all that he remembers. Basically all of his stories, including Excalibur, and then Astonishing X-Men on top of it. Why?
There's one somewhere in the middle I don't think I read, but yeah.
Why is she working in a bar? And why is she dressed in leather and spikes? I don't know. There were a lot of panels. There were a lot of words. It wasn't great. I get to the next thing. Boys Night Out. This is kind of interesting. Why are they dressed like men dressed when they went out during Swingers in the late 90s? It's Greg Land. Fair enough. They fight a demon. Kind of pointless. Stripperoki. Last one was kind of interesting. It was the best looking of all of them, I thought. I thought it had the best hook. I throughout this whole thing, I just thought, these people aren't very much fun to us be going out. It was like a view of the story of a nerd going out where like Colossus was like, I don't want to do anything. And I was like, okay, I've seen that story a lot. So what makes it interesting? They fight a demon. I didn't know who most of the characters were, who I was supposed to know who they were. And I know who the characters are, but I didn't know in the story.
They didn't do a good job of calling out who. I had to keep scrolling back to the title page that showed their faces. And then even though they're so the guys in the middle story going out in Wong's casino, newly demonized from the Doctor Strange story. And even though Wong is on the first page talking to the demon, for basically firing him from his job, when he showed up at the end, I thought it was Professor Xavier.
I did too. For a second.
Like, wait, what? And then I had to remember by the end, it was like, oh, this is Wong.
By the way, the most interesting part of the entire book was the conversation between Wong and the demon in the HR meeting. Easily.
Yeah, this was sort of like a teaser for other comics. Like at the end of that story, it's like, go follow them in X-Men Gold number 26. I don't think so. Yeah. And then you turn the page on the last story, and there's a cover shot for X-Men Gold 30. The wedding is almost here. It's three issues away now.
Couple of weddings coming up. Gotta say, Batman seems to be overtaking this one in terms of relevance.
Great cover, though, for that wedding shot. Is that Noto? That's Phil Noto, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely Noto.
So I just thought this was pointless. I always hate when people call comic cash grabs because they're all cash grabs.
Right.
But this just felt like there was no point to this.
Well, I'm glad
you didn't learn anything with these characters that you didn't know before the comic. You didn't their wedding took no new relevance to it. You didn't feel anything more. Well, I should be more excited about the wedding. I should be apprehensive, but I didn't feel anything about the wedding. It was just here's history of Kitty Pride. Here's an awkward bachelor party. Here's an awkward bachelorette party. That was it.
Listen, I tried.
We gave it a shot. Let's do ratings.
Ratings.
Out of five, I'm going to give it a two.
Two and a half.
There's no sticking with it. There's no more.
No, but I think we know where we'd land on that.
Also, patreon.com/ifanboy. You can go there and you can give the $5 or higher level and you can get your own dumb superpower live on the show.
Ooh.
As a way of thanks.
So I'm gonna go first. I got Alan Shipley. Nothing can wake Alan when he's asleep, and while he's asleep, he is also invulnerable. So it guarantees that he gets a good night of sleep every night.
Well, he wakes up on his own, though.
Yeah.
Like, an alarm clock won't wake him up. He has to let his own internal sort of, I'm well-rested now, I'm going to wake.
That's the healthiest way to do it.
Sure, but man, that's dicey.
Listen, it turns out, though, that while... I think eventually you're going to have to be pretty good at making yourself not stay up too late and you get to bed at the right time. Man, that guy gets to work, though, and everyone's like, man, he's on point. He's healthy.
For sure. I mean, he's got a glow to his skin and he looks younger, but like, you know, he's probably missed a bunch of flights.
He's not doing that thing. Well, you know, you got to work around it. He's not doing that thing where he's got that feeling behind his eyes that we talked about earlier. He can sleep with the windows open, so he doesn't have to worry about that first light thing.
So he doesn't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Alan, you know that feeling you get when you're tired? No, what is that? What do you mean, too tired?
Yeah, I just know.
What is tired?
It's time to go to bed, restfully. Yep. Alan, I mean, you could say that there's problems to it, but I think Alan is to be envied.
All right. Stephen Piper.
Paper.
His power is he can defrost any window with just a touch.
Ooh.
Just tap and it defrosted. He cannot frost, but he can defrost.
I like that because I know that that's not an issue you are dealing with.
Right.
And so it really, really had to think about it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's nice. Ben Clifford can make little angels and devils appear on other people's shoulders. That only they can see. You can't see them or hear them, just the person who's having them. But like if he looks over at somebody and it looks like they're trying to make a decision, he sort of twiddles his fingers at them, and then that person has an angel devil shoulder moment.
That's really fucking awesome, and I think you just blew a great comic idea.
Wouldn't be the first time.
I think that's a great short story.
Well, I've got it copyrighted here, so
Peter Ohana. Peter can defrost food with just a touch.
Come on. This is going to be the first time I'm going to have to reject one.
No, it's not. It's a big deal. Think about it.
It's true.
Man,
it's more relevant than the last one.
I took food out this morning. It's happened to me. It's happened to you. It's happened to listeners
everywhere.
Happened
to me yesterday.
You're planning on making chicken. You're going to take the food out in the morning before you went to work.
You know what I did?
Halfway through the day, you're like, oh, shit, I left the chicken in the freezer. Pete would just go, not a problem. And he would lay hands on said chicken, and it would be ready to cook.
You don't get that weird, like, semi-cooking that you get in the microwave defrost. Right. Or,
oh, it's terrible.
You know what I have, which is really awesome? I have a grill pan that I bought. Okay. It's like a cast iron. Cast iron grill pan that I bought when I didn't have a grill, and it's shitty as a grill. It's awful, and it's terrible as that. The other side of it is smooth, though. It's like a griddle, and I have an electric stove now, so I can't use it on there for anything. But if you put food on the flat side, it defrosts everything really quick and well.
Just lay it on the out on the, like, not on the heat or anything.
No, just put frozen meat on it, and it defrosts like a couple of pieces of chicken a lot faster than just leaving them out.
Interesting.
It's incredibly useful. I use it all the time. So like you're down to an hour instead of all day or something like that. The other thing you can do, if it's wrapped well, you can put it inside in cold water, and then it will, like, if you submerge it in cold water, defrost it.
Sure. But Pete doesn't have those problems.
No, Pete lives in a world of wonder, and yeah, I'm gonna accept this.
What Pete can do is freeze a ton of meat. And just be like, I'll have that one today.
Yeah, that's nice. And so he doesn't have the danger of it. Like, boy, did that sit out too long?
Right.
Which is a thing.
Perfect cooking temperature. So the chicken is room temperature.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and support the show and get your own dumb superpower. And also vote for the patron pick every week. Thanks for doing that. As we mentioned before, the patron pledge drive is happening organically over at patreon.com/iFanboy and in the patron private Facebook group. And we're still moving up, actually. It was nice to see that you're still taken up.
I had an opportunity for a really interesting all-media show that came up this week.
That
would involve an author of a book that was like, hey, you know, we could do a show about that. And I was like, I have no place to put that right now.
That's too bad. That's our next stretch goal, a monthly all-media podcast, which is about $300 away. So if you ever thought about supporting the show, just get you and 300 of your buddies support, throw in a dollar. Or if you want your patron power, get you and 20 of your buddies.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do really embarrassing math there real quick just to make sure.
That's pretty good.
And there you go. And then Josh could do that show.
Yep. It's all set. And then, of course, there's the Almost Famous show that we're...
I think we'd have to kick it off with that.
Yeah. I mean, I also think that that could cause the breakup of the show.
That's true also. I'm really confused by your opinions on this, but...
Well, I mean, you'll never know.
I'm really tempted just to start screaming fever dog at you all the time.
Don't.
So also, go to ifanboy.threadless.com where we've got 7 shirt designs. They have Fanboy logo shirt, the Herm shirt, the Pick of the Week podcast shirt, the rating shirt, the If One Is Electro shirt, the GDAT shirt, the Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters shirt. And you can also get all those designs on mugs. Somebody tweeted out a picture of a Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters mug. We got a couple of pictures of Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters bath mats. And I think we're going to hold on 7 for a bit for design-wise.
I think we got a bit of a hit on our hands. I mean, a very modest hit.
But the thing is, like, you know, we don't want to throw one out just to throw one out. We want it to be a good idea that we like. So the next time we come up with a good idea, which we're actively always thinking about,
sure,
we'll do that. But I think for now, 7 is a good number.
Yep.
It's a lucky number.
It's nice.
So it was the mixed number. So Check those out at fanboythethreadless.com. fanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out via PayPal directly if you don't want to become a patron or you don't want to buy any merchandise, which is totally understandable. fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find links to buy the books we talk about in the Booksplode, including what will be soon. Find a link for the upcoming Booksplode subject, New Avengers Breakout. And also a general link to your general Amazon shopping. fanboy.com/Amazon/support. fanboy.threadless.com and patreon.com/fanboy. Thank you, everyone, who helps us out.
I'm telling you, I'm two issues into that, and I was like, oh, we got a show. I was like, I can talk about this. I can talk about this. I can talk. It's like a it's gonna be a good show.
It's a wealth.
I can. It's totally. It's gonna run long. It's gonna be a good show. I'm looking forward to it.
Zach writes in and says, which do you prefer, the Who's Who in the DC Universe flat cutaways or the official handbook of the Marvel Universe isometric ones? And I like that Zach assumed that without context, we would know what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And we did.
Yeah.
But it's just always there's always a risk. And so what Zach is referring to is in the old days of comicdom, in your Who's Who in the DC Universe, which was the Who's Who guide where you get character profiles, as well as the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, which was Marvel's version, you would occasionally get cutaways of equipment or bases or things that are not people. And they had different styles. Marvel's was more three-dimensional. You had these sort of angled cutaways showing all the different circuitry and things that was inside something. And whereas DC's was sort of a flat, here's a slice, here's the base sliced in half. You can see all the floors and where Batman keeps his stuff. And
that's which what everyone wants to know.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like your answer to this is going to be very dependent on what you knew and therefore liked first.
Okay.
I remember discovering the Marvel official Marvel handbook when I was, what, like 11 or 12 or something like that, and I instantly just bought one. I didn't even realize that it was like volume X through Z. I think that's what it was because Wolverine was on the cover. And I just was like, I want to read this. It did not occur to me that there were many, many other volumes of it. It was just, I'm gonna pour through this. I'm going to read every single thing in it, which I did multiple times. Never bought another volume. But but there was a point, too, where they came out in issue forms. And I bought all those and I read all those.
Right.
Around did
you,
that
you,
same time.
You were probably well out of it by the time the binders came around.
Yeah, this would have been late 80s. So there was an update. There was the original handbook to the Marvel Universe, which existed in trade form, which... people might not know that was not normal. There were not a lot of trades. There was the Phoenix Saga, and there was a couple of Batman trades, you know, and there were few and far between. But there was a whole set of the Handbook of the Marvel Universe. But they did an update, basically in issue form. I never read the Who's Who ones. I you'd mentioned them, but I never.
Yeah. Well, in the 90s, they went to book. They both. I don't know who did it first, but created. Binder forms of these, so you could have giant binders. Marvel's was regular size. I believe DC's were oversized. But anyway, I had both of those. I had somewhere is still my giant gray binder of the Who's Who ones. Anyway,
I feel like that. Well, we used them for a show, famously.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Now I both famously. What a dipshit. I really liked the way the Marvel ones were set up. In that you would get, it was like, who are they? What's their real name? And then what's their power
specifically,
class?
This is the cutouts we're talking about.
Yeah,
so
no,
I'm off topic here.
I know. I'm past that. I don't care about that part.
Okay.
I just wanted to talk about this thing that I really liked.
Sure.
But to this day, I still relate everything. We talked about this something on the Infinity War podcast. I relate everything to the strength levels that I read about at those times.
Right. Because it's imprinted on your brain.
Yes. Absolutely.
It's like calling the bridge the Triborough and not the Robert Kennedy Bridge.
But just in general, the I'm looking at stuff from the Who's Who one, and I don't have to look up the Marvel one because I know exactly what it looks like, and I liked the more uniform format of the Marvel one better.
Right. Marvel one was like rigid in its form, which is funny because, you know, the personality of the company is not that. That's what DC gets knocked for.
Yep.
Whereas DC did it as sort of like pinup pictures. And Marvel did very rigid front view, side view, back view of each character.
And like the art was all standardized and normalized.
Yeah.
There wasn't like – occasionally they would be like, this is a Sienkiewicz drawing they put in here. That's weird.
But cutaway-wise, I think they both sort of – they're both really similar and they both speak to different aspects of nerdery. I think the Marvel one is super nerdy because what it would do is, like, for instance, I'm just looking at one right here online. It's the cutout of the Ant-Man helmet. And it's like a full circuitry drawing of all the stuff in there. Here's where the sonic insulation is. Here's where this visor stop is. Here's where the cybernetic inducers are. Here's where the low-density padding, high-density padding. Here's where the frequency shift devices are. Here's where the audio frequency shift circuits and amplifier. Like, no one needs to know that, but that's what they did. And that's what they did for all that stuff. And that was like the super nerdy part of it. Whereas DC's was very much about, here's what the layout of the Batcave is. Here's where Batman keeps his costumes. Here's where he keeps his cars. Here's where he keeps his supplies. Like, it was all that kind of thing. So it's
giant
a very
penny storage.
Yeah, I mean, also the penny washing, you know, the shine equipment. So it was all spoke to the very nerdy part of being a comic reader, which is in itself a very nerdy thing.
Which
to
for
do.
Us came along at the right time.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Should we do one more email?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at cutaways from the thing, so sorry. The last email would be from Travis. He said he's been listening to the podcast every single one since 2011, which doesn't seem like it should be that long ago, but apparently it was 7 years ago. The beginning of the New 52. Yes, the New 52 got me back into comics after a 20-year hiatus. As much as you guys didn't like the New 52, I enjoyed quite a few runs. Batman, Batman and Robin, Animal Man, Swamp Thing, Justice League, Wonder Woman with Azzarello and Chang, John's Aquaman, but I get it. It could have been better. So I currently started Rebirth, and I'm loving it. I'm listening to your podcast when Rebirth started in May of 2016. What does that mean?
We'll get to that as part of the answer.
Okay. I can't believe you guys still dump on DC. I recently re-listened to an episode where Aquaman number one was pick of the week, and you guys said some nice things, and then I noticed for every nice thing you said, you countered it with a negative. It's called criticism. And now, for some reason, Marvel always gets a pass. What the fuck you're talking about? One, did you enjoy Rebirth the further along it goes? Two, to me, it seems that you hold DC to a much higher level than Marvel. Would you agree to this? I love your show, and I can relate to, and I'm about the same age as I, so I can relate to you guys. But you guys nitpick the shit out of DC. From Travis, a real DC fanboy. Sorry, Connor, you're out as the DC guy. I've been thinking about this since 2011.
So, first of all, Rebirth isn't like a thing.
I don't even remember where the lines are.
I mean, we had those Rebirth books that came out after DC. I guess it was DC Rebirth in May of 2016, so 2 years ago. But it wasn't like a line-wide reboot or anything. We're not living in Rebirth right now. That was just sort of their way to sort of clean the slate a little bit, change the creative teams up. But it wasn't like books really changed all that much. Some books did, but not many. So I wouldn't consider this like Rebirth as a New 52 type start over. So if someone says to me, are you enjoying Rebirth? Rebirth isn't a thing to enjoy because it's not a thing that exists. Now, you know, we've been doing iFanboy for 18 years.
Yep.
And the show for 13 years.
Yep.
And one thing we've learned, one truism is you can never love something enough for someone who really loves something.
Well, right there at the end, the signature of the name is Travis, the real DC fanboy. So right away, your bias is there and your radar is going to be attuned differently.
Yep.
And we all have that also. But we will, Travis, you might be shocked to learn that we get this same email about Marvel.
Yeah.
Not a couple times. We've gotten this email a lot of times from people about Marvel, and we've gotten it a lot of times from people about DC. And most of the time, we look at it sort of like, really? Because you're hearing what you're hearing. Now, there was a thing that I think was interesting, where you said it seems that we hold DC to a much higher level than Marvel. And I think there might be something to that.
Well, hold on. Before you get deep into that, just to level set, well, I'll talk about 2016 because that's what he's referring to here.
Right.
Numbers-wise, 2016, out of all of our picks, 16 were DC and 15 were Marvel. So it was pretty evenly split.
Sure.
We didn't dump on criticism. And then hold on. So 2017, I think it's like 2-1 DC to Marvel picks. It's Marvel's been in a bad spot for the last couple of years. We've made no bones about saying that.
None.
We've been much harder on Marvel than we've been on DC. I think, the last 3 years or so.
I think that there's a couple of things going on. Like, they both have a feeling that is, it is not, it's not an objective thing. But, like, Marvel, I think of in a certain way, and I think you do too. We don't necessarily think of them the same way, but, like, Marvel should feel kind of like this. And DC should feel kind of like this. Mm-hmm. And I think that when Marvel plays a little looser, it feels like they're doing what they're supposed to. And when DC plays a little looser, sometimes it's odd.
I don't know if I agree with that, but I think
it's
what
really
I
would hard
say
to define. So
is that DC changed their core principles in a way after New 52?
Yes.
And they've been slowly introducing them back. And that was part of what the whole quote-unquote Rebirth thing was. It was the Geoff Johns thing. We've lost – some of these characters have lost their core principle. Like what that whole – we talked about it before, the whole one, what's one word to describe this character yes. situation he had. They got away from that. So that was something we criticized. And Marvel's problem was they got rid of all of our favorite characters at the same time. And that was part of our problem with it. And also for people like Hawkeye, Josh's character were changed irrevocably. So there's always things to criticize. And when you have a discussion show like this in which you live in the nuanced gray area, mm-hmm. you're going to have as many criticisms as you are going to have things to praise, especially when you're dealing with people with different personalities and different tastes. We're not a monolithic hive mind here. If I like something, Josh may not, and vice versa.
That's very true.
Or Ron or Paul or Ryan or whoever's on the show with us. And so, yeah, if I like something in Aquaman but Josh doesn't mean we're dumping on DC. It just means we have different tastes and different things we're looking for, different things we want in a comic reading experience. But again, I think it comes down to the fact that, as you said earlier in the beginning, if we get these emails from DC people, from Marvel people, from if we don't like a thing as much as – and in hell, it happens with the movies too.
Yeah.
If we don't like a thing as much as you like it, you feel like we don't like the thing. But it's not true. We have someone who told us we didn't love Wonder Woman enough. We got a very angry email about how we didn't love, or it was a comment on the show, how we didn't love Wonder Woman enough for him, even though we all gave it like 4.5 out of 5 stars. Yeah. So you just, all we can do is say how we feel about things, and we're not saying how you feel about them.
And it's interesting because there's every nice thing is countered by a negative. And to me, I'm like, that sounds like excellent criticism. Like, this part was really good. This part could have been better, because there's not much use in a criticism that comes across as this was all awesome.
Right.
Because there's no
which occasionally happens,
that.
But it's very rare.
But
rare
I don't thing. Want to do that. I feel like I failed when I do that. And that's why whenever we do a show on a movie, for example, is always, what did you like? What did you not like? And people take that as, if you say something you didn't like, then all of a sudden the whole thing is bad. And it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, we had someone just said recently that how much we were bagging on Infinity War. I mean, that's literal insanity. But again, because we said what didn't work for in this movie, because some things didn't work. Hardly anything's perfect. And it's looked upon as hate, even though this is the critic game. This is the podcasting game. We're in it. And this is how it goes.
And also just to keep it interesting for us, like there's an academic exercise. It isn't just about us picking out things that we don't like. It's also about you know, talking to you guys, talking to listeners, increasing that conversation, like, well, here's something that maybe you didn't think of. Now, you might not agree with it, but it's food for thought. And that's the point of what we're doing here. We're not really here to be like, this is good, this is bad, and swing judgment on something. It's to understand.
Yeah. We're not coming down from the mountain with tablets saying these are the way comics are, and these are the good ones and the bad ones. It's more of a
sometimes
we're having a discussion to figure out how we feel, and hopefully, A, you're entertained. That's the most important thing. And B, you think of something you maybe didn't think of, or you find something you didn't think of, or you discover something new. But we're not here to pass judgment.
Adjust the way that you think about it, really, yeah. and just reevaluate. Because when you do that, at the end of the day, it's not a method to find a way to like something less. It's a method to understand what you like more so that you can appreciate that. The way that I look at comic books now, after 18 years of doing this and 13 years of talking about it, is incredibly, incredibly, incredibly different than it was earlier. And I appreciate the things I like about comics so much more. When we were talking about Scott Godlewski's storytelling, we did not have the ability to do that early on. Mm-hmm. And right. And to just look at it instantly and be like, look what he's doing here. This is great. And that to me is a much more profound enjoyment of the things. And we are hoping to share that because I love that feeling.
Yeah.
There.
So
can I just,
there you go. I mean, yeah. I mean, I just, it, yeah.
One more bit on the Marvel DC thing. I think there's a general, I'm going to make a generality. This is not always true. I tend to find that I enjoy DC books more that are at the top of their line when they're really good. And when they're not, I'm disappointed. So if your Batman, your Superman, your Green Lantern aren't great, then I'm not really feeling like I'm down with DC so much. Right now, I think Batman and Superman are in a really good place, and it's interesting. I don't expect a lot out of DC low-tier books because they're usually not very interesting. I have the opposite effect with Marvel. I go to Marvel now to see the stuff that they're doing on their fringes because I think that's where the interesting stuff lives for Marvel.
Yeah, and it's just – it's you know, it is what it is.
Yes.
We can only talk about how we feel.
That's so true.
Thanks, Travis. Thanks, Zach, for writing in. Contact at ifanboy.com is where you can write in and get in the show. You can also send us an audio file if you want to send us a newfangled voicemail.
There's no way that anyone has a device that they could do something like that with, though.
Let's talk about upcoming or shows or previous shows or shows living in the halo around the show.
Yeah, I want to go ahead and make sure that people go back and listen to the Talksplode episode I did with Donnie Cates prior to that Venom issue coming out. They sold a lot of copies of that comic book. So clearly our tastes aren't really that important. We didn't bag it. I think we're just like, I don't know. I don't get it.
A hell of a lot. Listen, Venom is a popular character. I totally get it. Totally get it. Not my thing.
It worked. And, you know, it was a fine book. So, but also, like, I just really like talking to Donnie. And his story was super interesting to me. And then coming up, we've been teasing it, but it's true. The Booksplode on New Avengers Volume 1 Breakout, which is the first 6 issues of New Avengers from, I think, 2006 or 7, will be out this week. Sorry.
This week.
Connor, there's special editions aplenty.
Yes, so previous on the feed, you can find Batman Ninja, the animated series discussion with the Animated Brain Trust discussed the anime version of Batman that came out recently. And then right behind this show on the feed, you can find the Deadpool 2 special edition show. And then next week, after Booksplode, there'll be a solo podcast. So there's a lot of special edition shows in these 2 weeks. You got a Booksplode. You got a Deadpool show. You got a solo Star Wars story show. You can go back and find a Batman Ninja show and have done a Donny Cates show. There's a lot of extra shows this month. And some of those shows were unlocked by the patrons. So thank you, everyone, for contributing and adding new content to the world.
We answered that question for way too long. Head over to ifanboy.com, find all of our podcasts. You can find out what the pick of the week is before by social media, either on facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter. You can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram are the places for that.
And if you like the show, please leave a review or a star rating, even if you just have a second to click. That helps people find podcasts, not just this show, any podcast you listen to. It's really one of the best ways you can help to support the show is to let people know about it and help people find it on your iTunes or your whatever search aggregator you use. The more ratings and the more reviews, the better. So thank you, everyone, who does that, helping spread the iFanboy word around the globe. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
See you next week.
See you next week. I'll probably be the last to know. No one says until it shows. See how it is.